Atla Shah. From all of us, good evening.
The studio director was Wayne Moses, the editor, Anna Korychinska.
Ahead of the election, two groups discussed the prominent issues.
It's not so much a matter of money, it's a matter of social networks, and that's where the internships come from, the opportunities for your children.
Sharing their contrasting experiences of education, the economy and immigration.
I don't see it as a bad thing, you know, there's lots of positives to immigration, but I think, you know, you have to be careful that you can sustain it.
Problems and solutions discussed in two rooms, beginning tomorrow evening at 8 and then available on the BBC Radio 4 website.
Well, now it's time for Book at Bedtime. Gorski by Vesna Goldsworthy. Nick arrived in England from Serbia in the early 1990s. 2 decades later, he looks back on his time spent as a bookseller in Chelsea and the year that the fabulously wealthy Gorski commissioned him to create a library, a task which drew him into the world of London's Russian exiles. The reader is Philip Arditi.
Natalia Summerscale was one of those willowy Russian women who was so tall and so beautiful that your heart missed a beat when she entered a room. She was impossibly elegant and made the gentlest of movements, movements that carried a hint of some great disappointment. I was smitten by Natalia, although I knew that she was not only married, but clearly and conspicuously out of my league. For a long while, I had no idea who Mr. Summerscale was. I was convinced that he must also be someone special to have been chosen by this woman, for she could have had any old billionaire she set her eyes on. Natalia engaged in no discernible form of work beyond the vague notion of bringing a retrospective exhibition of Ilya Kabakov's art to London. That, at least, was what she told me when she first came through the door of Christopher Finch's shop one February morning, wrapped in some expensive silver furs and smelling of mimosas. Over a few months thereafter, she used to turn up in the bookshop, say a polite hello, look around the art section, drop a few £50 notes on the desk, name a selection of titles, then leave. An hour or two after, the driver would turn up to collect her shopping. Her library on the subject must gradually have become quite sizable, yet weeks passed and her putative exhibition got no closer to fruition. Occasionally she was accompanied by her daughter, Daisy, a girl who was as blonde and willowy as the mother. I searched the name Summerscale on the internet, and I narrowed it down to a picture of a reasonably good-looking middle-aged man, a very English, strongly built man, like a former army officer. He was coming out of some charity bash at Claridge's. Natalia hung on his arm like a silk kite about to take off. I dropped Summerscale's name into conversations with my regulars and even one or two of my emails to Finch, and I got contradictory responses. "They live in that old hospital off Fulham Road," said one lady. "Spent over 2 years doing it up, drilling God alone knows how deep into the London soil." "Old money," said another. "Far too much money being splashed around to be old," said the third. No one seemed to know what Summerscale was doing in London now, but most suspected he acted as a kind of consigliere for the Russians.
"Well, I knew his father, something or other in the British Embassy in Moscow after the war," said Finch. "Young Thomas Summerscale was called to the bar in the late 80s, went over to Moscow with an American consultancy, hooked up with a few people his father knew, who came back with trainloads of Russian money and that stunning Russian wife. We had an English wife before, somewhere in Gloucestershire."
Could one be starstruck by someone who was not a star, but something more beautiful and rare? Natalia Summerscale was a complicated Fabergé egg, a priceless object I did not desire to possess. I tried to imagine the Russian place where she might have grown up, without much success. She might have been raised in a Siberian heroin den or a lavish dacha on the outskirts of Moscow. Nothing fitted her otherworldly looks. She paid me next to no attention. I don't think she even realized that I was not English, not until that phone call many months later. I was wondering if you have a copy of that book about Ilya Kabakov just published by Yale University Press? I knew I was speaking to her, although she hadn't introduced herself. Did I have that Yale book? Did I not? I made sure we had every last title about conceptualist art. I had placed an order practically before the author had submitted his book proposal to Yale. Oh, I am so glad. Mr. She hesitated. Kimovich. Nikola. Nicholas, I mean. Call me Nick, please. I stumbled, then paused, sensing another question in her hesitation. I am Serbian. You know, from Serbia. Belgrade. I do know where Serbia is, Mr. Kimovich. Even Belgrade. I visited it as a girl with my papa. What a lovely town it was. She hesitated for a brief moment when I suggested I would be happy to deliver the book myself. I was about to close the shop and I would welcome some fresh air and a walk. Yes, she said. Yes, why not? I dutifully pretended to take the directions, although I had known it all for months. The place was called the Laurels. I walked the streets around it many times, looking over the high walls, across the manicured lawns. I tried to picture Natalia in the warm glow of a reading lamp, perhaps wearing a pair of tortoise-shell spectacles. But fantasizing about her day-to-day life was a bit like dreaming of a hand-crafted yacht. I had none of the components needed to put the dream together. I had spied Natalia on the lawn in front of the Laurels only once. By then, I was already living practically across the road, a bit closer to the river, in the gatekeeper's cottage of a property whose main building was so majestic that it towered over the Laurels. It was a Baroque edifice which had once housed an army barracks, with a central dome as big as a cathedral's and miles of covered colonnades. It made Buckingham Palace look like an ungainly box by a roundabout. It had been surrounded for months by tall hoardings while it underwent a process of reconstruction, which in its elaborateness seemed to dwarf anything that the summer scales had done. The rent on my little cottage amounted to practically nothing, because I was happy to live next to the building site, and happy to confirm that I would leave with a month's notice as soon as the build was completed. I soon got used to the tremors which shook my new dwelling. I took to fragmentation like a fish to water. Contingency was my element, my natural habitat. At the Laurels, the bell echoed down some endless corridor as I stood between the CCTV cameras, which pointed at the top of my head while I tried discreetly to wipe my feet on a thick doormat. I never expected to see Thomas Summerscale in front of me. He materialized, barefoot, wearing an old Aran jumper and a pair of threadbare red corduroy trousers. He pushed a thick mop of hair off his face before he offered his hand in a handshake.
Well, good evening, Nicholas. I'm Tom Summerscale. Please come in. Natalia told me to expect you.
Somehow implying by his expression that she had told him much more than that, that he thought she and I were friends. Behind the double front door, pieces of artwork dotted the cavernous space. Summerscale stood there and smiled, allowing me moments to take it all in. He was now taking me through another double doorway, at the far end of which was Natalia, sitting on a blindingly white sofa, holding the hands of another woman and smiling at me in welcome.
"Let me relieve you of that," Summerscale said.
He took the book parcel from me and handed it to a maid who was standing to attention a couple of feet away. The woman next to Natalia looked extraordinary. She seemed considerably shorter, although not short herself, and she wore a tight red jersey dress which ended just above her knees. Underneath it, her body seemed constructed from a bundle of thick ropes tied tightly against each other, all muscle and bone and artificially tanned skin. It was obvious that she was wearing no bra, but also that she did not need one. I am talking about this woman's body because I have no idea of how to begin to describe her face. Her skin clung tightly to her high cheekbones. It seemed as though her skull was coming through. Yet she was bubbling with energy and somehow handsome with it all. Gergana Pekarova, Natalia said and released Gergana's hands. Pekarova jumped to her feet and grasped both of mine simultaneously. Her handshake was firmer than Tom Summerscale's, and that is saying something.
Jerry's a famous Bulgarian gymnast, an Olympic gold medalist,
Summerscale added as he disappeared off into the bowels of the house. She is my personal trainer and my daughter's, Natalia explained. And art advisor, Pekarova said with a faintest smile. She led me to an armchair which faced the sofa at an angle. Two maids wheeled in an enormous silver samovar. I stood up to leave, but Natalia touched my arm. Stay, she said. She spoke softly, yet uttered an order nonetheless. Jerry Pekarova thanked the women in Bulgarian and started busying herself with platefuls of pastries and sandwiches, all the while asking questions about Finch's bookshop and me. Natalia listened, silent. When, in turn, I asked Pekarova about her life behind the Iron Curtain and her success as a gymnast, she responded half-heartedly, as though the topic bored her. Natalia turned away from me.
Let us not talk about communism, she said. It is so boring. You sound so English, Mr. Kimovich. What Iron Curtain? I have never seen it. Have you? Let us talk of art and beautiful things.
I had rehearsed Russian and Soviet art stories on the way there, hoping to impress Natalia, yet the only time she displayed a glimmer of curiosity about me was when, on our third porcelain cup of oolong tea, Pekarova and I started discussing Serbian tennis.
Djokovic, said the Bulgarian. Your compatriot, no? A handsome boy. Sexy.
Natalia suddenly stood up and took us both by the hand.
I have a great idea, Jerry. Why don't you and Mr. Kimovich take my Wimbledon tickets to see Djokovic play? I am sick of corporate hospitality, all those friends of Tom trying to be entertaining.
She placed Jerry's hand over mine and held them thus. The Bulgarian threw an extraordinary smile in my direction. Her tanned cheeks sank under her cheekbones while her lips, covered by a thick layer of red lipstick, plumped up over her improbably white teeth. She looked like a female, or not so female, a version of Mick Jagger. Yet I had to admit that, although outlandish, she was far from unattractive. This was clearly matchmaking, yet there was something vaguely humiliating about the exercise. Was Natalia Summerscale putting me in my place by linking me, however tentatively, with her personal trainer? Daisy arrived carrying a folder of music sheets. I used the interruption as a cue to offer my apologies and leave. In the course of our surreal tea party, Natalia Summerscale had stood up from her sofa twice. Once to take Jerry Pekarova's hands and link them with mine, once to kiss the top of her daughter's head. And both times she held my gaze and said,
I am so happy, so, so happy.
I did not believe it for a moment.
Philip Arditi was reading from Gorski by Vesna Goldsworthy. It was abridged by Livesey Davis, produced by Jill Waters, and is a Waters Company production for BBC Radio 4. The story continues tomorrow evening at 10:45. After the news, comedy-infused poetry cabaret from Cheltenham. BBC News at 11 o'clock. David Cameron has sought to convince voters that the Conservatives are the real party of working people. Speaking at the launch of the Tory manifesto in Swindon, he promised more free childcare places in England and said housing association tenants would be given a right to buy their homes. Peter Kellner from the polling organisation YouGov said the Conservatives were trying to show they were a party for everyone.
The Tories' big negative is that voters see them as a party of the toffs, of the rich. They're out of touch. And so looking at what they're saying about house buying, about not taxing people on minimum wage, about doubling free childcare, they're going very, very much for the kind of voters who might vote Conservative but have been put off by this sense that they're a party for the rich.
Labour and the Liberal Democrats have said the Tories' right to buy plan is unaffordable. Housing experts have also been critical, saying the measure won't guarantee the construction of new homes. The leader of the Green Party, Natalie Bennett, has called for a peaceful political revolution to end austerity and tackle climate change. The party's election manifesto includes a pledge to create 1 million jobs, rebuild public services and scrap tuition fees. Around 400 migrants from Libya are thought to have drowned when their boat capsized in the Mediterranean. More than 500 migrants have already died in similar incidents this year. But the Italian Coast Guard says around 8,000 have been rescued in the past 3 days. Police in Glasgow have questioned a man who was with an Irish student in the hours before she went missing. Karen Buckley, who is 24 and from Cork, was reported missing by her friends after leaving a nightclub at the weekend. Officers are searching a park in the city where her handbag was found. Tributes are being paid to the American soul singer Percy Sledge, who's died at the age of 74. He was best known for the classic ballad When a Man Loves a Woman. His manager described him as magnetic and the most humble person he'd ever met. BBC News.